This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Welcome to We Empower, the radio show that inspires you to embrace your potential, resilience, and strength. In these challenging times, we're here to help you unlock your power to overcome obstacles, pursue your dreams, and shape a brighter future. I'm Anna Martinez, your host for this empowering hour.
Welcome. Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of We Empower. I'm thrilled to have you all with us today. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired. Let's make today count. In today's episode, we will have two great guests here to introduce. First of all, we have here Alina Timofeva, award-winning AI leader, immigrant trailblazer, and voice for women in tech, on a mission to inspire 50 million through resilience and opportunity. And afterwards, I'm very happy to introduce here Aldo Balestra von Stauffenberg, a style icon, global model, and cultural connector, shares her journey from the one runway to purposeful living. So I'm happy to start now with Alina Timofeva. Welcome, Alina, here in the show.
Thank you so much, Annabelle. Thank you so much for having me today. It's a great honor.
I would like to introduce you with a few words, and please correct me if I'm forgetting something. You lost your home, you lost your home country, with not a little more than determination to become one of the most recognized voices in AI, data, and digital transformation. Your story is really nothing short of extraordinary. You're a LinkedIn top voice, you're a global keynote speaker and recipient of 8 national awards. And you have advised some of the world's largest institutions. Yet what sets you apart is not just your expertise, but your mission to inspire 50 million people, especially women and underrepresented voices, to see technology as a path to resilience, empowerment, and change. Today, we will journey with you from the struggles of your early life to the global stages of Davos and beyond, uncovering your hacks, lessons, and mindset shifts that made it all possible.
Thank you so much, Annabelle. I look forward to this episode.
Great. Alina, if we start a bit earlier, if you take us back to the beginning, what was life like before you ever imagined a global career in AI and tech?
Yes, I mean, I come from a very simple background, actually, in Russia. I was brought up by my grandmother to be a housewife and more serve my husband. So I come from a very simple background without education. I'm the first woman in my family to work. I'm the first woman in my family, you know, to not be a housewife. And I was very lucky to have an opportunity, you know, to study mathematics. I won the Moscow State Olympiad in mathematics, and I went to the Moscow State University for free without any, you know, payment. So I was lucky to have that opportunity. But my first job was actually washing toilets in McDonald's. And there was a bit of, you know, the earning the money from the early stage. I recognize, you know, how you come from the very humble beginnings and how you move up. And ultimately, I did have an opportunity to come to the UK. And I'm sure we're going to mention it a little bit. But I had to apply to more than a thousand jobs, and I was getting rejection after rejection. So I used to fly, you know, to UK overnight, go for an interview, and then fly all the way back and go to my job back in Russia. It was like very difficult, both financially and also in terms of, you know, getting all these rejections and actually pushing through. But I'm very lucky that I came and I managed to succeed after some time. I came to UK, and this enabled me, you know, to grow fast in my career.
You told me that you stayed tuned and you never gave up, and I think this is one of the skills you have, which is part of your life, by never giving up, but stay female with that, or stay female during that, not getting hard and aggressive, or missing or losing the hope of the word, which the word has is awaiting for you, right? I mean, you told us a few things from your early life, and this is really impressive how you made your first steps. What did this transition feel like, coming from Russia to London and seeing there that it could be maybe your new love, but seeing that you were rejected? How did it shape your resilience?
So when I came to UK, I obviously stood out because I couldn't speak English the same way I speak right now. I had a challenge with the language, with the way how I speak, but I was very diligent in terms of, showing up and going. It was a very big cultural difference as well. And also, in a way, Russia is not perceived that well in the UK. So there are some of the challenges on the cultural level. But I was, working through it. A lot of it was a lot of hard work and persistency in terms of, learning from the other people, observing how their colleagues operate, how the culture operates, and learning at a much faster pace than perhaps my peers who come from United Kingdom. And I think that the key thing for me is I recognized, the pain of not taking the step and the pain of, standing behind. So I really wanted to progress, and this was something which enabled me to push through despite the challenges.
I can totally imagine. And I mean, many know that you're an award-winning leader, that you're a top speaker, but not everyone knows that that you have also a miss story.
Oh, yes.
Can you share that chapter of your life also with us?
Yeah, so I think that there are quite a few. I mean, something which I realized is even if you go up, you then somehow go down, and then you go up, and then you go down. So at some point, I used to think, when I reach 30 and when I get to win all the awards, I'm going to just keep going up. But I've had a few of the setbacks. So the first is, of course, coming and, not belonging within the community. That was first. But then I had some of the challenges in terms of progressing perhaps too fast, which in a way, also, I recognize that I need to look more after, my schedule, my health, and also being having an opportunity to not just, work, but actually focus on some of the other areas of my life. At some point when I came, I spent time in a refuge, which is unfortunate, but I was lucky to kind of push myself back in terms of, doing much more speaking, doing much more service to our country, and having an opportunity to make an impact.
And do you like to talk about this, or that you got awarded with this Miss Award, or is it something which makes you feeling that it doesn't fit that much because it turns you maybe into an area where you would think that it doesn't fit that much?
Well, I think it's always important to speak about the whole story because sometimes we only see the successes and, you feel that you don't belong because you are having these challenges. And a lot of my story was sharing the failures openly with the community and beyond because I haven't seen many role models doing this. And I always thought that everybody is perfect in the same way as we find AI right now creating the perfect models or AI creating the magazines or like even some of the things in the magazine. So, what is important for me is to have the full scope so that the colleagues and the people around me see the whole picture.
Yeah, and that's definitely, of course. You told me you came to London and you couldn't speak any word of English. I try to imagine that, how it feels. What was the biggest cultural personal challenge you faced arriving in the UK? Imagine the situation when you arrived there. Can you share a story with us?
I mean, the biggest challenge was the immigration, to be honest, because when I was looking for a job, it was challenging because they would always ask me, why are you here? Why are you coming to our country? And it's kind of similar to the situation now with the Brexit, in a way that I had to prove that there is nobody else in Europe and UK who can, get my job. So, and I was applying for, analyst roles. So my key successful part was that I studied mathematics. I was a scientist, but as I mentioned, I couldn't speak the same language. So my hardest part was convincing, the partner or the interviewer that indeed I belong in the country. And I think what I always evidenced is my persistency, in terms of flying to UK, coming here, going interview after interview. For example, in one company, I was rejected 4 times in the same company for the same job, but I kept, repeating. And then I finally got that offer.
Very good. And what did the people say when you got the job after four rejections?
Well, it wasn't the same people, so nobody quite knows that it's exactly the same thing. It was so funny because I got 3 offers at that time, and the rationale is I finally got some feedback. One of the challenges, I was never getting the feedback, but once I got the feedback, I could improve. And actually, I didn't go in that job because I got another 2, but I still at the time, I still wanted to do it so that I have the options. One of the challenges, as you may know, even with the Brexit now, that if you lose your job, potentially you are kind of not protected in terms of the visa. So you always need to be mindful that you do the best you can.
I try to imagine this, and I think it's a lot of pressure, and it needs also a lot of vision and resilience that you stay and you continue, and you have a dream. What was your dream at that time, which made you that strong? Was it just because I can't imagine that it was just, I don't want to go back. I don't want to be a housewife in Russia. I don't want to just give birth to 5 children. I'm knowing you a bit, I think it there should be a vision behind it.
I mean, personally, at the start when I came, I didn't want to be a housewife, so that was my main motivation. But I think when I started my journey, I saw so much opportunity. At the time, technology was more of a back office, so nobody was talking around it. But I, throughout my career, I wanted to make it more visible. So, for example, when I worked with the engineers, with the data scientists, I always wanted, to tell the story to the bigger world. And not so much in the technical way, but more what does it mean? What does it mean for the people? What does it mean for the opportunities, for the risks? And I see that now, 10 years later, we have a lot of discussions around AI and all the public forums, in all the social media, on television as well. But at the time, it was different. So I wanted to really kind of make a change in terms of the types of work I do, the projects, how they serve, the people, how they serve the community, the customers. And I'm very grateful that now we see this change, that technology is no longer the back office. It's technology and the business going together. And we see, how this impacts the customers like you and I.
This is great how you describe it, because it's just a vision you have, which is more than just a job or just a love to the job. Or no? Was there a mentor or conversation that radically shifted the way you saw your career?
So when I started, I wasn't actually that successful. So I tried to go for promotions and I was rejected 3 times for the next level promotion. So I did have a mentor and I'm very lucky that he is still in touch with me. And, even though I changed the jobs and I changed the companies, I think the challenge there was not so much with the vision, because I think at the time it was more still integrating in the community, but it was definitely somebody who believed in me. And I feel that if I didn't get that belief at the time, it would have been much harder. So I would definitely really encourage, the mentors, the sponsors to see not just the person doing the job, but the bigger picture of what they can bring to the community and to the country, and to inspire them, to spend some time on it and to enlighten it in a better shape.
You've told me that it was not easy in the beginning, and I can imagine. I mean, some people say you're kind of fearless. What? But I think the first time is always the first time. What was the first big room you ever walked into, and how did it feel?
Well, the first, let's talk a little bit about the speaking, because I had to do the presentation in my first job on my first client, and it was very small. I just had to say 1.5 sentences about the project as part of the bigger presentation. And I spent like 1 day rehearsing it, and I was so stressed. And then I kind of, was very nervous. And I said it, I'm sure I said it, but I got my manager to listen it, his manager to listen it, everybody else to listen to it before I said it. But obviously now you can see that I'm talking without the script, without, knowing in advance. And I'm an introvert, so it was very difficult for me to stand in front of even a small room at the time with the other colleagues, with the people who I don't know, and talk even for a simple, a few sentences, which I definitely knew in terms of the content. So that was one of the challenges. And part of it was the fact I'm an immigrant, I'm an introvert, and also that I don't speak the language exactly the same way.
Really impressive. You received, also impressive, 8 national awards. Which one carries the most personal meaning for you, and why?
I really enjoyed the one which is most inspirational person of the year. So this is together with BCS, the Chartered Institute of IT, and essentially they recognize the people who make the change in the community. So at the time, I was doing a lot of mentoring with different organizations like Kajigo, Migrant Leaders, and I also just did a TED talk, which was actually about my story, my life story, how I came, how I persisted. And it was such a great response in terms of people similar to me in similar situations that came and said, you are telling our story, our struggles, right? And we really are, grateful that somebody is portraying it and, people are listening to it. So I was really happy that this wasn't just, my award, but the award for us as a community and that the efforts were recognized.
You said beforehand that you had and you had faced failures, and that it's sometimes like a like the ocean. The wave has a
Yes,
rise
it
and it
does.
goes down, and yeah, that's life, and it's of course also great if few more of us would accept that. And both is for growing, no? Both is for celebrating. But what are your top three resilience hacks when everything feels overwhelming, or when you stuck in a situation where they thought, oh, I hope I win, and you didn't win?
Yes, I feel I am getting better at it myself. I'm still not perfect, so I can't have the perfect advice. I mean, number one for me is really to keep going and, to wake up every day and to continue making the steps, even if you don't necessarily know exactly where they're going to bring you. I think one thing, and we discussed it, Annabelle, when we met, I had a bit of a challenge with the health. So this is a little bit more difficult because you can't really predict, even if you push, you can't say, I'm going to do these three steps and I'm going to be better. And I feel one of the things there comes is more the belief and the belief that this is going to happen and some sort of both the pause and the belief that things are going to change. And I feel, and I hope this will resonate with the listeners, is sometimes when you are in this moment, you don't actually think that the things will change because you are kind of stuck in the situation. And I feel that ultimately what you described, the wave, right? It does happen. The question is just how fast and how you can push through it without, less emotional attachment.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good answer. We have now a small break of around 2 minutes, and we see each other afterwards here again. So stay tuned, and we continue afterwards.
The station that makes you feel good.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We continue now with Elena Timofeva, award-winning AI leader, immigrant trailblazer, and voice for women in tech on a mission to inspire 15 million through resilience and opportunity. Elena, you told me before the break about your hacks, and I like the idea on to see life as a wave. Or as waves, where you know that after the down, there comes the up, and after the up, there comes the down, but both is great for learning, right? Do you have a morning or daily ritual that grounds you before high-pressure meetings or your day full of things?
So I feel, Annabelle, if I find a perfect solution, I'll definitely share. But at the moment, right, it's literally, one of the techniques is thinking, about the, not the positive part, but kind of thinking that you've already done it. So the affirmation behind it. And I'll tell you a story because you probably don't know it. When I met you the first time, I actually really wanted to meet you the second time. And I was like, I'm going to meet you in Davos. And then we sat at the same train in the same thing, because I obviously I didn't quite know where you're going to be. And there are so many people. So it was something which I was thinking about in advance before I came to Davos. And I find that with this intention, you have an opportunity to, to influence. So this is one thing. And the second thing, which is more not the routine per se, but more a thinking, is that you can really influence and attract the people that you, interact with, that you want to be part of, the kind of scenarios that you want to be part of. So something which I found is I always followed this gentleman who was global head of innovation in HSBC. And he was my idol when I was like a graduate person. And my husband, who used to work under his department, he was always saying there is no way he's going to talk to me. But I was, I never wrote to the person. I never like interacted directly. But then when I met him in one of the speaking opportunities, he actually now invited me to work together with him. And I know that it took some time and a few years of thinking about it, but it's a great way to also consider that you can be intentional about your circles and the people you meet.
Absolutely right, Alina. And it's funny because when we met the second time in the train, it was that I dreamt about it the day before. Then we meet the next day, and seeing you was a little bit like a shock in a way, like, oh my God, it turns into real. And yes, I completely agree with you. We use this too little people use this power we have, which is our intuition and which is also our imagination. This is something where I think we would feel and act much, much better and more fulfilling if we know and think about this, that we have this power, because it could act also against us if we just use it without knowing, right?
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give to someone who feels invisible in their workplace? Because you said this, you wanted to meet somebody. You knew that it will be hard. People, very close people to you, told you, just as your husband, no way. So often people are sitting there working, they wish they could be somewhere, meeting somewhere, but they have no idea, no hope that something else can happen. Yeah, what advice would you give these people?
So I will definitely focus on, First of all, taking your active action where you can. So, for example, with the speaking, I was not invited to do a TED talk. I applied myself and I got rejection from every single TED talk that I applied to, TEDx talk. And then there was one, there was a cancellation and they invited me for the speech and I became the most viewed for their particular TEDx and one of the 10 most viewed in that month in globally. So I think that there is always an element of showing the ambition and showing that you are there and you want to meet these people. I did have, situations where, let's say, I was even invited to events, but the day of the event, I was asked not to come because I'm not senior enough. And that was a bit disappointing. But I've always found a way kind of outside. And this is, some of the ways how I managed to get the bigger speeches, the bigger responsibilities, the bigger opportunities. And I feel that once you get, at least the smaller steps, the more you can, talk about them and show them, the more it becomes the reality that, other people invite you to perhaps bigger opportunities or similar opportunities because they already see you in this particular, stage or this particular project. I feel it's very important, in many cases, people don't come to you to offer to you an opportunity, unfortunately. So you have to try to find yourself a way.
I like your honesty about this, Alina, because I know many people which had a really big fight to get things. And if you would ask them, they would say, "Oh, it just came there. I was just asked." And I think the really people which are shining, they don't need to do something. And you're one of these people. And therefore, I really like your honesty and authenticity, because this is not only something which shows how big you are, but this is also about really the right role models, because you don't learn from people which are just trying to hide how their path was. And nowadays, I think a lot of people think that they just have to take a camera, smile into the camera, say hi, and then it's not far away from being a social media influencer earning millions of dollar. And the truth is far behind, or it's far beyond. I think it's important to be in this way, this clear, to give people not only the ideas of what it means to get successful, but also give them a really clear advice which helps them on their way. And this is what you do, what I think. You often speak about women and underrepresented groups in tech. What was the first time you truly felt really seen, that after these rejections, after this waves which gave you the feeling, "Oh my God, when will come the high again?"
So I feel in my second job, I had a good opportunity in terms of making a big impact. So I came actually with the knowledge from the previous job, but I managed to build my own responsibility. So I didn't follow the typical route of a manager at the time. I was very proactive in terms of sharing the knowledge which I had from before, building the accounts, building the opportunities, having, the conversations. And I feel that this was ultimately recognized. I feel that the main advice for me was not, to follow the typical structure or the typical route, because ultimately it's harder to get seen that way. When you slightly divert, I mean, you have a risk, so it can go both ways. And I've had instances where, it also wasn't always successful. But I think ultimately it's an opportunity to make an impact in and to stand out and to have your voice heard. Something which I've been hearing a lot is because I focus on disabled people, underrepresented groups, who are introverted, is the first step, right? Because they feel that they are invisible and they don't, push through. But I think that there is always an opportunity to try to go beyond and to be seen and heard.
Very important. As you are also talking and making your mind about ethical AI, what does ethical leadership in AI or also ethical AI mean to you?
I think that there are a couple of things, right? Right now, there is so much AI and it is happening at a lot of speed, right? So the efficacy is number one, the use cases towards which AI is being used. So you may have heard that it's used in bad ways in terms of creating the deep fakes, creating, the different fraud issues for the banks and for the customers like you and I. So this is the first part. But the second, much more important part is who's building AI. Because if you take a doctor, you wouldn't let an unqualified doctor, a non-ethical doctor to operate on a patient, right? You would want him to be ethical. You would want them to be, qualified. So in the same way, we want the people who are, building AI, building the models to be ethical. And there is a concept there in terms of diversity. Diversity of thought, because you have heard different use cases where, perhaps the women or the underrepresented communities are perceived different by the algorithms. So it's very important to have the diversity of thought at the stage of building the models rather than just the consumption and fixing them later on. I feel it's a really important topic just because AI is developing so fast and people are more focused on the ROI, on the speed, on the new releases, and perhaps less on the human side, which is actually something which is going to help us, grow and serve the community.
Yes, all right. I'm absolutely with you. If you could write one kind of rule of tech for the next decade, what would it be?
I think definitely it's an opportunity for technology to be a trailblazer and the equalizer. Because as you know, women at some point, they were like doing the coding, they were developing the programs, but they didn't always get the light and the shine on top of it. But now, I mean, obviously the community is helping as well, but with the AI, there is a great opportunity for technology to be an equalizer. And I feel that we no longer need to have just a few role models. I think it's an opportunity for everyone to contribute for our economy.
That's a good point. You have the mission, or you told me, but also other people, that you have a mission to inspire 50 million people. Why that number?
I think there is no, it was a little bit of a guesstimate, because I just thought it's a big number and I may not reach it, but I have to put a big number. It originally started with my TED talk, and maybe a lot of TEDx talks, they just get 1,000 views, 2,000 views, and actually there are very few that get a big number, and I got more than 500,000 views. So I thought, okay, if I do 100 more effort, I'm going to reach 50 million. But obviously, it's about, the message, which is very important, right? And then the authenticity of the message, because this is not just a number, which is, just a big number. It's more something which touches people. And as you mentioned, many people go through the difficult times in terms of the resilience. And there is obviously the big focus on technology right now in terms of making it resilient, making it ethical. So I think that this is an important, message to reach the people, and I feel that this is something which will help ground the numbers.
What does success mean to you today, and how has the definition changed from when you started?
I think when I started, I was very much like, I do the best job, I get the promotions, I get promoted every single year. And I did indeed get promoted 4 times in 3.5 years. I think now it's moved much more into serving the community, serving the mission, serving the vision. And I feel that, the opportunity to inspire other people is something which truly sets, my mission and vision apart. Because sometimes when you're in a job, you have a very strict schedule and you work very long hours and you kind of can only focus on that particular task or sets of tasks. But when you think about it much broader, actually the impact on the economy and on the people is much bigger because together, we can make this impact. And, I'm happy that I have, earned my voice in terms of, being seen and visible. But obviously, this is not just me, and there is an opportunity for other people to get involved to share the same message. And I feel that the success would be not just, me reaching however many people, but it's more building the momentum, building the movement so that there is a change in terms of how we perceive AI, a change in terms of, how visible and seen and heard and recognized we feel as underrepresented groups, people with disabilities, people who are introverted, the women as well. And I feel that this change is something which is really going to be a success story.
I like your optimism there. And if you think about the next generation of tech leaders, you already mentioned how important different things are. What gives you hope when you look at these? Do you get their ideas? Do you get their information? Do you see characters, personalities, where you think, yes, it goes into the right direction?
I feel, to be honest, right now there are so many technology opportunities in every country. So I had the luxury of meeting quite a few leaders, and there is a big push in terms of supporting the youth around the technology. I would probably say that number one, it's about the ethical use of AI and the broader technologies. I had an opportunity just yesterday to visit the MISC Foundation in Riyadh, and they were working on different use cases as an NGO or sets of NGOs to, help the community using the technology. I always feel that it's important to kind of step back and see how this impacts. My concern is we have so many technologies, building very fast. So we as humans don't quite understand all the risks and the concerns. So, for example, if we take Replica, which is one of the AI tools to build an emotional connection, it could be potentially misused depending on certain cases. So I would say that for the younger generation, they need to be mindful of where they build technology for good. And if there are certain use cases of fraud or deepfake, or some emotional exploitation, it's important to for the people to be integral enough to kind of to step ahead and to observe and to make a change against this, because there are so much discussions right now that it can go in both ways, and it's important for us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your thoughts. Before it ends, I would like to ask you once again, as an expert for also life organization. I mean, I know you're using also a lot of tools. What are your hacks for leadership, for your own leadership over the day, habits or also technical gadgets you use?
I mean, for me, really, it's always learning from the others. So, for example, I started listening to masterclass about from the more better leaders potentially, or the leaders who are considered better leaders. So I'm always learning in terms of thinking that even if I'm good in what I do, there are opportunities to observe others. And it's not necessarily the direct learning of one hack or another hack, but it's even being within the community and, hearing the voices of both from the leadership, but also from the people, my community and the people who are learning, who are coming, the up and coming generation. I think it's something which is really important, the feedback loop in between. And I really enjoy spending time with the youth, as I did yesterday with the MISC Foundation, but as I also do with the BCS, the Chartered Institute for IT, is, hearing their ideas and hearing, what they want to see as the next future leadership.
Thank you so much, Alina. It was a pleasure to having you here. I'm very much looking forward to seeing you again, maybe in the train on the way to Davos. Maybe we get it also done in something more arranged that we talk before we arrange something. We don't trust our frequencies only alone. So thank you very, very much. And I look forward to our ongoing exchange and the impact we will both continue to make together the world a better place.
Thank you so much, Annabelle. Thank you so much.
So, after the commercial break, we will continue with the introduction of Alder Balestra von Stauffenberg.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home, perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So I'm very happy to introduce Alder Balestra von Stauffenberg, style icon, global model, and culture connector. Shares her journey from the runway to a purposeful living. And I would like to introduce her with a few more words. I've known Alder for many years now. She started from the glittering runways of Milan, Paris, and New York to the intimate conversations that shaped art, culture, and human connection. Alder Balestra von Stauffenberg has lived a life in full color, born with an innate sense of style and grace. She has worked for the world's leading designers, collaborated with culture visionaries, and navigated continents and causes with the same elegance she brings to every room. Today, she opens the door to her extraordinary life, revealing the stories, lessons, and moments from childhood dreams to serendipitous love that have changed and shaped who she is. Join me as we explore Alder's world where glamour meets death and beauty always tells a story. It is always spiked with a cherry on a cake, which is humor and the glance of the daily work. Hey, Alder, very happy to have you here.
Annabelle, so nice seeing you. And after describing me in such a way, I feel ashamed and I feel like I'm not up to the interview. So, you know, let's take that challenge.
I see also you've chosen a great great room where we see a little bit the ones who can see now.
That's why I put it in the back, because I said that's my most important thing in life. We can talk about work, but we can talk about love as well.
Yeah, and it comes together at you. And I mean, I remember the first time when I saw you, it was at the private home of Tita von Hardenberg, and you stood there and I saw you just, I came close, I saw your silhouette from the backwards, and it looked just as elegant, but elegant not as a kind of I try to be elegant. It looked like an elegance of life. So somebody who has this kind of life you love and is full of that. And this is how I met you also. Then more and more you have this humor, you have this love, you have all of this, and it fits perfectly also to that what you do in art, for example, but in everything you do. And when I read an article about you, which shows you with a picture where you stay on your stairs, just cleaning the lights above you. Again, I thought, yes, this is Alder. Alder, which puts elegance into the life. And I wanted to ask you something completely different as a first question, but this brings me to a question which I would like to discuss with you. And you know, I mean, I've never been the Miss of a country. I did a bit of modeling, just a tiny bit of modeling. But what is important for me, and I think this is something we have in common, we love aesthetics. We love a beauty, and we don't love it just as a kind of the lipstick we choose or the ring we wear or whatever. Aesthetics is something which is about life. It's about organizing your life, seeing life, treating other people. It is influencing everything we do. Is this right?
Totally right. I have this image now, something silly, the way you order your refrigerator, for example, because I'm also, you know, like normal things like that. I always choose, I put color by color and I try to make it aesthetically pleasing. The same thing go with your, how you organize your life, how you see, how you move, what you pick. I try to see beauty everywhere around me, you know, or to focus on the beautiful things. And then I think goes in everything, and especially doing things, looking for beautiful things, but also finding, recognizing the pleasure in doing so.
Yeah,
Because the pleasure is, it's what makes your life much better.
absolutely. And I like that what you're saying, because this is something we often forget about. I mean, serious humor and aesthetics and pleasure is not something which is against a seriousness. I think it has to come together, because it gives us power, it gives us humanity, it gives us the learning of intuition. That
I think
means our
everybody needs lightness, you know. Lightness is really something, you know. You can be deadly serious, but you know, you want to lift up. Maybe you are dealing with someone who has a big pain. You know, imagine, what do? You try to lift up that spirit, and sometimes you are feeling sad, or you are confronting a challenging time. You want to lift up yourself, and through beauty and through the aesthetics, which doesn't mean, I'm not speaking about luxury. I'm speaking like true beauty. True beauty, it's something very simple. Can be looking at a beautiful sunset, could be some stones you find at the beach, and you find it, then you create something with it. In that sense, beauty.
Exactly. I had an experience a few days ago where my son came home and he brought him a huge leaf, and he said, "Oh, mommy, we can make a nice set for decorating the morning table." And I smiled, because I remembered that 2 days ago I was at the store where they're selling nice sets, which are very expensive. It starts with 450 euros for one table set where you can decorate something on it. And I laughed, because this idea of my son made me again showing me exactly that what you said. Elegance, beauty, luxury has no price tag. It is about aesthetics. It is about this organic. It is about the beauty of nature. And elegance is something which doesn't need to be from Valentino or Dolce. I mean, it could be, of course, and it's not a statement
That's
against.
up to another level, let's say. That's that. But you know, I think simplicity and beauty, I mean, for me, nature is the most beautiful thing. From that on, we can work with it, we can transform it, we can make it, we can communicate it in another way. But that's already perfection, right?
Yes, exactly. And I think the perfection in the imperfection of nature and beautiness, that which is a small little thing, is something which is individual. And this, some say it's imperfection. I would say it is really the very special thing which shows that this is nature, which shows that there's life, and which shows that it's m done and meant from somebody for somebody individually.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I don't know where we should, normally, I don't know where we should start and where we should end, because we can speak now.
But also because I had a long life, and let's hope still much longer.
Yes, of course. This gives me, of course, the hope, Alder, that we can do a second series. This is a good point, and we definitely have to meet soon. But I mean, your life started very early with fashion and with stuff. How was it that you got Miss Italy when you were 16 years old?
And it was 16 from that time, 1970s, not 2025. So at
Yeah.
16, I was totally unprepared, and I had no clue even that Miss Italy existed. And I didn't know, let alone thinking that I could be modeling. You know, Trieste, where I was born and raised, was so out of the, you know, sophisticated track. We were kind of a forgotten city on the border with at that time, Yugoslavia. So, you know, it happened by chance, in the sense that I went dancing on a Sunday afternoon, because at that time you went dancing on Sundays afternoon only. Of course, in a place where I was not allowed to, so I was lying to my mother. My father was a captain on boat, so he was not very often at home. And there it was the election of Miss Trieste, where they were giving little numbers to the guest. So they picked me, they gave me the number. Of course, I didn't want it because, you know, then I had to face my mother. My mother was a very severe single mom at home, you know, who would have gotten very mad if she would have known that I wasn't there. So, anyway, so I ran into the bathroom and I said, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I cannot do it. And then friends of mine picked me up by force, brought me to the podium, and the rest was history. I mean, mom forgave me.
Wow, what a great, great story.
But you know, that wasn't fashion. You know, at that time, Miss Italy had nothing to do with fashion. The designer, first of all, it didn't exist, the term designer at that time. They were couturier, and then, you know, there were women who copied the couturier in the various city. Prêt-à-porter didn't really start it yet. And so, you know, when after 1 year being Miss Italy, and they wanted me to continue to go to Rome, to go to be part of Miss World, and then my parents called the protector of minors so that I didn't have to do all those things. And I'm very happy I had that kind of support from my parents because I didn't want to be really Miss Italy. I wanted to be Alda Balestra having fun with their friends, and I had a lot of fun, and having a normal life of 16 years old, which more or less, I in the end I was able to do it because I continued the school, I got my diploma, then I went for a short trip to America. The sister of my mother married an American during wartime. And so I spent 4 or 5 months there. I came back with a heavy duty Texan accent.
And you got
And
married
then,
meanwhile.
excuse me.
And you got married meanwhile, didn't you?
No. I got married much, much, much later. There is a whole life, but we don't have much time, so I should shrink everything. And after Miss Italy, for all another channel, it was not a consequence of Miss Italy. I started modeling, and that was in 1975. I in Florence by coincidence, brought by a friend of mine. He's still a friend of mine. At that time, he was selling fashion, and I met Gianni Versace and Enrico Coveri the next season in Milano. That was the beginning of Prêt-à-porter. It was Florence and then Milano. 76. I got booked for 28 shows in 1 week. And
Oh
that
my
was my
gosh.
beginning, like boom, explosion. In the sense that it was my destiny to be on a podium. You know, maybe comes from classical dance I did. I always felt very kind of at ease, naturally, also in front of a camera, also in front of you know, filming and etc. Because you know, when you do ballet, you are performing in front of a mirror, right? So you have this sense of yourself, and that was very, very important for me. That helped me to be successful as a model, you know, and what you're calling about the grace and tilades. You know, when you do ballet, your hands move in a certain way, put in a certain way. You know it because you are looking at yourself in the mirror. You have your projection. And that was very, very helpful.
Great. What's your personal ritual you maybe stayed before stepping into an important event? What you maybe took from that time?
Okay, yes. I prepared a few things here. I mean, first of all, this morning, no, I knew it was going to be live until I'm like, so, oh my God, how do I look? Of course, the light has to be good. So I'm facing the window, no fake lights until like this. It's just normal. But say you don't want to be too strange or too much light. Then put a little bit of lipstick, which normally I never do. But for you, for the occasion, I made an effort. And then I think, you know, if I would go out, I would three things that I would do. Okay, I want to be more sophisticated now. I need to go to the city. I need to meet an important person. And here I go. I change my glasses to my sunglasses.
Ooh.
I put my hat on. I don't have a terrific day for my hair, but I mean, kind of normal. But even if I would have my hair pulled back, I would put a hat.
Oh my God.
And before going out, I would just do a tiny bit of perfume. So, you know, I would breathe, and then I say, I'm ready.
That's nice. I like that, Alder. Because I know so many people going out just not even thinking about which situation it is. I like this, what you gave us as a
Just the
mission.
simple things that gives you a little bit of security, because we are all, doesn't matter who you are, we have our insecurity, no? I learned how to keep it at bay, you know, in the sense how to go and to, you know, and also you don't want to show too much your insecurity to everybody, because people can be also very mean, right?
That's right.
And
That's
so you decide to whom open up. And to whom not, who you can trust. So you make yourself a little bit, I wouldn't say a mask, but a protection. No? In my case, my hat and my sunglasses, or even my glasses, are my protection.
that's great. And how would you define true beauty today?
True beauty, I was thinking about it because today we are. It's so easy to be perfect. Everybody has wonderful teeth. Everybody has wonderful skin. I start to like imperfection. Say, what about the sexy guy with the broken tooth? You know, and I think and we're gonna see much more imperfection becoming perfection. I was always quite good in trends, you know, to kind of feel what is in the air. And yeah, and I think. True beauty, yes, it's true, is in the eyes of the beholder, but there are some regulations, you know, that, for example, you know, as we said before, most of the people likes the sunset. Why? Because, yes, it is beautiful, but also that beauty comes with an emotion. And that whatever gives you an emotion and makes you feel good, that's beauty.
That's great. And I wished it doesn't need to be the closing statement, but it is the closing statement, Alder. And I'm looking forward to seeing you soon again, also in the radio show, to have a bit more time continuing talking about the other many things about art and what you have to tell. So for
Yeah, what
today.
I do now, but I mean, we talked a lot about beauty, but we can talk a lot of other things.
Yes, and you do so great things about arts and events, and I love to touch this in the next time. So very, very happy to see you again. Thank you so much to be with us and to give to our listeners a lot from your word, to give them new inspiration and exciting insights, and maybe also the motivation to live life to the fullest.